crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigal. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel, not too far away from the really dramatic events taking place in Syria. I was just up on the Golan Heights about a week and a half ago, just before this chemical weapons attack took place in eastern Damascus, standing atop Mount Bental, overlooking the Syrian and Israeli Golan Heights. Looking towards Damascus, just 60 kilometers away, and knowing that there was still fighting taking place, but little did I know a couple of days later there would be such a horrific chemical attack using chlorine and some other nerve agent by the Assad regime against his own people there in eastern Damascus. While that's not surprising, he's been doing this for years, and he will likely continue to do it. Shocking to me and very difficult for me to put these things together just in my own head, to know as I'm standing there on Mount Bental in a very peaceful environment, beautiful environment, beautiful view, and yet knowing these horrific acts are taking place not too far away. Well, those horrific acts were broadcast all over the world, and in the aftermath of that, we've had the United States, Britain, and France launch just over 100 missiles against three different locations from the Assad regime, locations that stored chemical weapons that were also used in the development of chemical weapons. We're going to cover this on today's program. We're going to use all of today's program to talk about the chemical weapons attack itself and the reprisal and what it means for the Syrian civil war at large and the region at large as well. So please stay with us today. So going back to April 7th, this is when the attack took place. The Assad regime decided that it was necessary for them to finally remove these rebels out of this eastern area of Damascus after years of fighting them, unable to get rid of them entirely. While the rebels here, they were being defeated, it wasn't quick enough for the Assad regime, and they likely by themselves, probably not with the approval of the Russians, decided to use a chemical agent. This is not the first time this has happened, obviously, by the Assad regime, and probably won't be the last, I believe. Nevertheless, he used it, and this footage, as I said, was beamed around the world, and it took the eye particularly of President Trump of the United States. What's interesting about this attack, and I don't think too many people have put this together, that is that this attack took place on April 7th, a year to the day from when 59 or 58 Tomahawk cruise missiles were fired from the Mediterranean against an airstrip that was used by the Assad regime to fly its planes and drop a nerve agent on a number of its citizens, killing over 100 people. And here we are a year later, and Assad decides that he is going to use the nerve agent and chlorine again. While this has happened before in this past year, this date, I think, was particularly chosen by him to show that the previous United States attack didn't have an effect. And even Saturday morning after these three locations were attacked this time around by the United States, we have pictures of Assad just walking through Damascus, shirt unbuttoned. Life continues for him. And so it doesn't look like it is going to shake him too much. But it is worth looking back at this latest reprisal attack because of the use of the United Kingdom and France going along with it. And I think that is something that looking to the future is going to be significant. So if you go back to April 7th now, one day after the attack, I'll just run through a couple of Mr. Trump's tweets. He said this, April 8th, many dead, including women and children, in mindless chemical attack in Syria. Area of atrocity is in lockdown and encircled by the Syrian army, making it completely inaccessible to the outside world. Indeed, that is the case. President Putin, Russia, and Iran are responsible for backing animal Assad. Big price to pay. Open area immediately for medical help and verification. Another humanitarian disaster for no reason whatsoever. Sick. That's what President Trump tweeted. A day later, he said this: if President Obama had crossed his stated red line in the sand, the Syrian disaster would have ended long ago. Animal Assad would have been history. And then April 11th, he says this: Russia vows to shoot down any and all missiles fired at Syria. Get ready, Russia, because they will be coming. Nice and new and smart. You shouldn't be partners with a gas-killing animal who kills his people and enjoys it. And then April 12th, he said this: never said when an attack on Syria would take place. Could be very soon or not soon at all. In any event, the United States, under my administration, has done a great job of ridding the region of ISIS. Where is our thank you, America? Then, overnight, April 13th, Mr. Trump said this:
my fellow Americans, a short time ago, I ordered the United States Armed Forces to launch precision strikes on targets associated with the chemical weapons capabilities of Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad. A combined operation with the armed forces of France and the United Kingdom is now underway.
And then around the time that he gave that speech, we had the attack take place. And I'm just going to quote from the Wall Street Journal about the attacks. This came out yesterday, just describing what actually happened. It says this: in terms of military tactics, Saturday's strikes were markedly different from those a year ago, in which cruise missiles were fired from the eastern Mediterranean. This time, the strikes were carried out by the US, French, and British ships and aircraft in the Red Sea, Mediterranean, and the Persian Gulf. So this was quite an elaborate undertaking with the coordination of two allies from many different locations, likely to not set off or not likely to not travel through too much of the area that the Russians were involved in protecting. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Then this article quotes Marine Lieutenant General Kenneth McKenzie. He's the director of the Pentagon's Joint Staff, and he said this, quote: these attacks on multiple axes were able to overwhelm the Syrian air defense system. The Wall Street Journal continues: in the Red Sea, the guided missile cruiser, the USS Monterey, and destroyer USS Laboon fired a total of 37 Tomahawk cruise missiles. In the North Arabian Gulf, the destroyer USS Higgins launched 23 Tomahawk cruise missiles. In the Eastern Mediterranean, the USS John Warner and a US submarine fired 6 Tomahawk cruise missiles, while the French frigate Lagudoc, I don't know how to pronounce that, fired 3 missiles. In the air, 2 B-1 bombers, which took off from the airbase in Qatar, flew towards Syria and fired 19 JSSM air-to-ground missiles, and that represented the first time that this weapon has been used in combat. Then we also had British Tornado and Typhoon aircraft leaving from Cyprus. They fired 8 Storm Shadow missiles, and then French Rafale and Mirage planes leaving from France, they launched 9 Scalp missiles. And so this was quite intense. As I said, 3 different allies using different means of attack in a way that was we haven't seen at all since the Iraq War. General McKenzie, continuing from the Wall Street Journal, said Syria's air defenses were ineffective. Some 40 Syrian surface-to-air missiles were fired, many of which weren't launched until after the targets had been struck. None of the Syrian missiles struck an Allied plane or missile, and some may have caused damage to civilian structures. And so this was a very effective and precise strike by these allies against the Syrian regime, which again is very different from the first attack a year ago, not necessarily because it wasn't precise, though it was precise back then as well. But this time 3 locations were chosen, and this time it was in consort with the United States, France, and the UK. And this is interesting. This is different. Why France and why the UK were involved in this, I think, bears a lot of ponderance, and we'll just talk about that, especially the way that the French are wanting to get involved in Syria. We'll talk later a little bit more about the 3 locations that were hit. Now, to understand why it's important that the French were involved this time with this attack, we need to play back or go back and look at some history of chemical weapon use inside Syria, and that relates mainly to the Obama presidency. You remember when the Syrian civil war began back in 2011. This began as just a natural uprising. It wasn't religious in any way. It was against a dictator that had ruled over his people extremely harshly for a number of years, and many wanted him removed from power, as other Arabs throughout the Middle East wanted their rulers removed from power. And while the United States did do a lot to try and, well, did at least ask for Assad to step down, they tried some international sanctions against him, they were largely ineffective. They were largely ineffective. And months dragged on, and they realized that it was going to take more than just America saying for Assad to step down to actually remove him from power. And a way to do this would be if Assad used chemical weapons. He had a lot of chemical weapons. The U.S. maintained that they had about 1,000 tons of mustard gas, sarin, VX nerve agent in its arsenal at the time. And so President Obama in 2012, he said that Assad would cross a red line, this infamous red line, if he used chemical weapons on his own people. And this was inside of that an implicit threat of force. And this threat really did relieve many of America's Mideast allies, including the Gulf states, because it indicated that maybe the U.S. still had some backbone. If you're going to set a red line, you better follow through on that red line. Well, it didn't take long, just I believe about a year from that announcement of that red line, that Assad did in fact use chemical weapons on a rebel-held area on the outskirts of Damascus, really close to where this took place. And he killed hundreds of his own people at that time. Graphic images of these dead corpses circulated through the media. The red line was crossed, and people thought that America would act. Of course they would act. But before any action took place, United States Secretary of State at the time, John Kerry, he was asked by a reporter in London if there was anything that the Assad regime could do to prevent an American attack. And seemingly kind of offhand, Mr. Kerry responded and said that if Assad could, quote, turn over every single bit of his chemical weapons to the international community in the next week, end quote, that could do it. That would stop us from attacking, even though he's used it, even though he's crossed the red line, even though hundreds are dead. If he is willing to hand over those stockpiles, then we are willing to not attack the Assad regime. At that comment, or with that comment, the Russian bear's ears pricked up. Russia heard that, Putin heard that. In less than a week, Moscow approached the U.S. with a proposal. And what was the proposal? We'll do it. We'll remove Assad's chemical weapons. We'll ensure that all of Assad's chemical weapons are gone. And Washington, of course, embraced this idea, accepted that agreement. And even while Russia stipulated that if Assad didn't comply, there would still be no mandate for military action against him. And so Russia was already hedging their bets there, saying, well, we can try, we'll try and do it, but even if they don't, we're not going to back military action against Assad. And so what did Secretary Kerry at the time call this? He called this chemical weapons with agreement with Russia a groundwork for more cooperation between the Cold War enemies. Now, it's interesting. It's interesting because this very event, according to the French Prime Minister, or President, as we'll cover in a second, François Hollande, this opened the door to Russia's movements through eastern Ukraine. Russia felt like if America isn't going to stand up to their own red lines, or if their red lines are crossed, if they're not going to act like they said that they would, then we're going to have some free rein to act how we wish. Remember, at this point, Russia wasn't involved in Syria like they are today. They weren't inside Ukraine as they are today. They weren't. They hadn't taken over the Crimea as they have today. This was all taking place. This deal was taking place before those events. And this red line that wasn't a red line, as I say, is a watershed moment for Russia's geopolitical calculus in the Middle East. It was. It was for sure. And the French, as I said, were totally put off by this action by the United States government. Hollande, at this point, when this 2013 sarin gas attack took place by Assad, He commanded the French Air Force to prepare for punitive strikes against Syria's chemical weapons command centers, as well as anything else that had to do with these attacks. Hollande was willing to do that. The French president was willing to do that. Now, he assumed that since the United States had set a red line, that the United States would act, and he would be acting in conjunction with the United States because they had an ultimatum. So when Mr. Obama decided to reverse his decision, this didn't sit well with Hollande. He wanted to act, but the French didn't have the will, I guess, to act unilaterally without the United States. And both Hollande and his foreign minister, Fabius, have indicated since that time that they believed that this reversal in action showed American weakness. It was interpreted as a sign of American weakness, and it paved the way for Russian action in Ukraine and the annexation of Crimea. That's what the French believe. Because the red line was crossed, they were ready to act, and the United States didn't act. And then he said, after leaving office, Hollande said that he was, quote, convinced that events would have unfolded differently in Syria had the strikes been undertaken. So the French were willing to act back in 2013, but the United States backed down and they didn't act. Now, it's interesting, the French were ready and willing to side with President Trump this time around. Just after this attack took place by the French and the US and the UK, they declassified a document that's 7 pages long, and it asserts that the Assad regime has maintained a covert chemical arms program since vowing to shut it down 5 years ago. The French knew it. The French knew that Russia hadn't rid all the chemical weapons or that Assad hadn't handed over all of his chemical weapons. They knew this was the case. The United States knew this was the case. And yet, we didn't hear about it. The OPCW, they are the United Nations Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons. They were going to monitor the destruction of all the chemical weapons that Assad handed over. They won the Nobel Peace Prize that year for bringing 100% of Syria's chemical weapons to their destruction. They won the Nobel Peace Prize. And yet, the French knew, and even the United States knew, as we'll cover here in a second, that Syria's President Bashar al-Assad still had chemical weapons, still was producing chemical weapons, and still was using chemical weapons on his people. And yet, we didn't hear much of that until this latest attack. Now, the French, they issued their own, well, the latest French president, Emmanuel Macron, he gave his own red line about chemical weapons use. Just last summer, he said, and he reiterated this red line to Putin, even in a conversation with Putin. He said, when you set out red lines, if you're unable to enforce them, then you've decided to be weak. Such is not my choice. And that red line was crossed, and the French president, to his credit, did act in consort with the United States. But I think that he might have been willing to act unilaterally as well, because it's in France's interest and his interest to do so. But let's look at these locations that were attacked. Two of them were chemical weapons storage facilities, but it's the other that I want to focus on. And I'm going to quote from the Rosette report. This is from Claudia Rosette, April 14th, The Importance of Striking Syria's Scientific Studies and Research Center. And this talks about more about this location that was hit and the fact that we knew, or our governments knew, what was going on here for the past 5 years and didn't do anything about it. She talks about the list that General Joseph Dunford listed at the Pentagon briefing on Friday of these places that were going to be attacked. The first target he mentioned, he described as, quote, a scientific research center located in the greater Damascus area. He then added this military facility was a Syrian center for research, development, production, and testing of chemical and biological warfare technology. She says then that this sounds like the notorious Syrian Scientific Studies and Research Center, also known as the SSRC. In which case, there can be no doubt that these airstrikes were aimed at an incredibly high-value target, an outfit central to some of the worst depravities of the Assad's weapons programs, and as it happens, a longtime client of North Korea and Iran. On the 99% probability that this was the research center to which Dunford referred, here is some background. So she gives some background on this research facility, one of these places that was targeted. And definitely it deserved being targeted. I'm not saying that at all. The point I'm trying to bring out is that we knew about this. We knew about this place. And all through the final years of President Obama's presidency, here we are trying to be fooled into thinking that Assad's weapons program has stopped, that he's not using chemical weapons on his people. But that's not the case. We knew about it. The American government knew about it, and other governments in the world knew about it. She says this: the SSRC has been on the U.S. sanctions list for 13 years. It was first designated under the Bush administration in 2005, with periodic horrifying updates under the Obama and Trump administrations, targeting its various fronts, procurement, arms, officials, and connections. This is not just any old research center. According to the U.S. Treasury, it is, quote, the Syrian government agency responsible for developing and producing non-conventional weapons and the missiles to deliver them. So then back in 2012, according to the Treasury press release, she says that this was established back in 1971, and there was a lot of covert actions that were taking place there, the development of different nerve agents, plus purchases through this group from Iran via its different front companies for components used in the production of solid fuel for rockets. So we knew in 2012 what they were doing in this facility. And then following, on April 24th, 2017, following Assad's sarin gas attack on the Syrian town of Khan Sheikhoun, and this is the one that resulted in President Trump's action against them. So on April 24th, just after a couple weeks after that attack took place, the Trump administration blacklisted 271 employees of the SSRC, stating that these individuals have expertise in chemistry and related disciplines and or have worked in support of SSRC's chemical weapons since 2012. These people, we know 271 of them. This was just after the attack took place back last year. And we know 271 individuals that are worthy of being sanctioned because of their work in the chemical weapons production and development of Syria since 2012. In other words, she writes, during the same time frame in which Russia and the former Secretary of State, John Kerry, were assuring us that 100% of the chemical weapons were gone from Syria, the Syrian regime's SSRC was prolifically busy plowing ahead with Assad's chemical weapons program. They were actively engaged since 2012 in developing chemical weapons, still, and we knew about it. Well, at least our governments knew about it. So much so that as soon as this attack takes place, President Trump is able to pull up 271 names of people that work for the Syrian government in this facility that need to be sanctioned and blacklisted. Then she continues with this. We also have it in good authority that during the roughly same time interval, the SSRC was ordering up shipments from North Korea. Shipments were coming from North Korea. According to the UN panel of experts on North Korea sanctions, a report dated March 5, 2018, their investigations into weapons and dual-use shipments to Syria from North Korea turned up more than 40 shipments between 2012 and 2017. 40 shipments, and inside these shipments were what, quote, with utility and ballistic missile and chemical weapons programs. So there were items inside these shipments from North Korea in this five-year period, in the past 5 years, 40 of them that were picked up that had to do with chemical weapons. So this SSRC facility was worthy of being hit. But what I'm saying is, why wasn't it hit earlier? We knew that they were developing chemical weapons. This red line was being crossed. Even the Nikki Haley came out and said yesterday that 50 there have been 50 occurrences of chemical weapons being used in the Syrian civil war here. 50. We have documented evidence of 50. And yet, the United States chooses to act on two of them. I'm not saying this was necessarily a bad idea to act against the use of chemical weapons. Indeed, it is something that is horrific, and it's worthy of being attacked and destroyed. But the fact is that we knew that this was bound to happen. We knew it was bound to happen. So why not do it before? And now that it has happened, now that we have had another chemical weapons or reprisal attack by the United States, will the chemical weapon attacks stop? Now, these attacks have proven to be highly successful for Syria's president. He attacks with chemical weapons because it works. It works. A couple days after he attacked on April 7th, I think it was April 9th or 10th, what did we have but the rebels in this region that was hit by the chlorine and nerve agent attack? They gave up. They said, we're out of here. You can take this land. We can't submit to more of your chemical weapons attacks. And they were out. What years of besiegement using conventional weapons couldn't achieve, a chemical weapons attack did. And that's why Assad uses them. And that's why Assad, a couple of days after, or a day after, that the United States, France, and the UK bombs or with missiles hits his chemical weapons facilities, he's getting pictures snapped of him walking through Damascus like nothing happened. Like nothing happened. Will this attack restrain Assad? Definitely not in the sense of the Syrian civil war, and most likely not in the sense of using chemical weapons again. Now, if we just zoom out here and we just think about the Syrian civil war, it has dragged on for way too long. Half a million civilians have been killed. Millions and millions, around 10 million more, 8 to 10 million more have been shipped out of the country or internally displaced. A horrific example of what mankind can do to themselves has been taking place in Syria for the past 8 years, or almost 8 years. And Jonathan Stanza, he wrote this in Fox News, and this was an opinion piece. He doesn't belong to Fox. He does comment for them. He's a senior vice president for research at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He wrote this in an opinion piece entitled, "Why Targeting Syria's Chemical Weapons is Not Enough to Stop the Rising Civilian Death Toll." He says this, April 14th, "By firing 105 missiles at Syrian chemical weapons targets before dawn Saturday, the US, Britain, and France sent a clear message to dictator Bashar Assad. They will not tolerate the regime's use of toxic gas and other weapons of mass destruction against his own citizens." But, he writes, "it seems the tripartite alliance is prepared to allow Assad to keep killing Syrians on a massive scale using conventional weapons. The death toll in Syria after 7 years of war is more than 500,000 and rising. The fact that these deaths did not involve chemical weapons makes them no less tragic for their victims and their surviving loved ones. It's hard to know exactly how many of the Syrian deaths have been caused by chemical weapons, but we know that they represent a relatively small percentage. The Assad regime has killed more Syrians through crude barrel bombs, mass executions, starvation, and deprivation in other ways." Then further down, he writes this, "So despite the new attack announced by President Trump, the Syrian-Iranian-Russian conventional war machine that is responsible for the overwhelming majority of the murders of innocent Syrians remains intact, and it's not being threatened by America and our allies." And that is the case. I mean, President Trump in his whole speech was extremely clear in that this isn't against the Assad regime in the sense that we are pushing, we're going to move for regime change. We're not going in further than this. This is just a targeted strike against his use of chemical weapons. In fact, you can do whatever else you want to do, and you have done that. Mr. Assad has done that. Everything else under the sun. We think ISIS is bad. A lot of what ISIS has done has been replicated by the Assad regime on his own people. And we're saying, or the United States is saying, that as long as you don't use chemical weapons, we're not going to act. That is a message that could have been received by Bashar al-Assad listening to President Trump. Now, if you do use chemical weapons, we are going to respond. So at least a red line is being upheld here in that regard. But what about the 500 other thousand people that were killed by other means, by the Assad regime? The fact that in our modern day and age, when we have just overwhelming firepower to put an end to such a regime, I'm not just talking about the US here, I'm talking about other so-called other nations that pride themselves on their morality, the fact that this man could be allowed to continue to do what he's been doing for so many years should really make us think of whether or not the Western world is morally hypocritical in many ways. And so this man is going to be allowed to continue his hold on power, even after what looks like an overwhelming attack against the chemical weapons facilities. Now, there is one instance where I think that we might be seeing a change here, and that change isn't coming from the United States. Just a week before this, or a couple of days before this attack took place, President Trump said, "We're out of Syria. We're drawing down on our forces. We're almost done, everybody." And, of course, there would have been a lot that rejoiced at that from President Trump's own base, political base, in the United States. And probably Assad was happy with that. Probably the Iranians were happy with that. Definitely the Russians would have been happy with that, that the United States was going to get out of there and that they would have looked like ensured their own future success inside Syria. But then Assad had to go and use a chemical weapon that provoked the United States. But again, this isn't a wholesale attack against the Assad regime. This isn't for regime change. This is just a striked precision attack against the use of chemical weapons. There is one player in this tripartite alliance that has more at stake and that might be willing, now that it has at least done some type of military action against the Assad regime, fired some of its own missiles, that it might be willing to get more involved in Syria, and that is France. That is France, because they have so much more at stake of what takes place in Syria, and it might be coming to the point where they finally act. There was an important piece, I believe, in foreign policy that was written this past week. He starts out this article, this author, talking about the red line that Macron made last summer, and the fact that he should decide to act on that red line, and indeed he did. So this was written before the attacks took place. He writes this: "But even if Macron fails to persuade Trump, a unilateral French strike would still be worthwhile. It would mark a welcome change from Europe's strategic complacency for the duration of this conflict." This is a man that looks at Europe, who has been affected, Europe being affected severely by this conflict with the influx of refugees, forcing their hand, Europe's hand, to do deals with Turkey to try and act as the gatekeeper for Europe to stop these millions and millions of refugees flooding into Europe and destabilizing the continent. Yes, Europe has a lot at stake. You think they would have acted to prevent what's happening in the Syrian civil war? You think they would have done that? And he's saying here, it's about time that somebody from Europe does that indicates a change from their strategic complacency for the entire duration of this conflict. Then it says this: "The Obama administration has been rightly criticized for its unwillingness to intervene in Syria. But it's worth remembering that for the United States, the Syrian conflict has been seen first as a humanitarian disaster that abetted the rise of the Islamic State, or a revision of the US-led order in the Middle East led by Russia and Iran, often both. Few would argue, though, however, that vital US interests were engaged. And indeed, that's why we have the call for the pullout of US troops. What is so vital for US interests there?" And then he juxtaposes this, the interest for the United States acting, to the interest that the European Union should have in acting. He says this, again from Foreign Policy: "For the European Union, which is geographically much closer, Syria has been existential. With the flow of refugees reaching European shores and Islamic State radicals striking continental capitals, the Syrian conflict has deeply strained EU institutions. It has revealed the limits of Europe's security cooperation and border control, and the lack of solidarity and political consensus over immigration. It has greatly encouraged the rise of anti-European populist movements. all of what we're seeing inside Europe right now, the election of strongmen throughout the continent, and the rise of anti-immigrant parties has been because of the Syrian civil war. And then he says this, and yet the Europeans' approach, informed by its military limits, has been to wait for Washington. Wait for Washington to act in Syria and save us. Then he concludes his piece this way. Macron seems to have understood this is a problem. Now he must do something about it. And indeed he has. But this isn't going to stop the Syrian civil war. These targeted strikes against the chemical weapons facilities. There is going to be need for more action. More action to stop Assad, Iran, and Russia. Will that action come from the United States? Potentially. But the Bible indicates that that type of action is, at least, Syria's future. And who's going to be in charge of Syria's future? And who's going to have the influence over Syria in the future? The Bible indicates that that's going to be Europe. Europe is going to be more involved in Syria. And we've been saying this on this program for a long, 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 long time. And have we come across a watershed moment with the French and the UK, particularly the French, being involved here in Syria? Yes, we have the French, that part of Syria after the First World War was given to them to look after, as well as Lebanon, after the dissolution of the Ottoman Empire. So they have some historic roots in this conflict. But are we going to see more dramatic action from French? Are we going to see Germany actually do something as well? Germany supported these strikes. They said it was a good thing, but they didn't act militarily. The Bible indicates that we're going to have Europe get more and more involved. And so while these precision strikes by France, the UK, and the United States won't do much to change the Syrian civil war, it might have opened the door for European involvement, greater European involvement in Syria. And this is something that the Bible indicates is going to happen. That's all we have time for today on today's program. If you'd like to read more about our analysis and the forecast of Watch Jerusalem regarding the Syrian civil war, one that we wrote, or our editor-in-chief wrote back in 2012, just after it began, he wrote a piece entitled, well, you should read this piece he wrote, entitled How the Syrian Crisis Will End, a question people have been asking for 7 years now as it enters into its eighth year, this civil war. We have the answer for you. We don't know how necessarily it'll get to it, but we know that in the end, we're going to see a dramatic change in who Syria answers to. It's not going to be Russia. It's not going to be Iran. It's going to be Europe. And maybe French action that we've seen over the last couple of days is opening the door for that. Thanks very much for listening today. If you'd like to email the program, you can do that by sending your emails to letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.